Session number 13122, Mr. Ron Dinnin, Reel 11.
Mr. Dinnin, Reel 11. We're talking about your time with the Hallamshire Battalion, York and Lancs. How did you fit in with them as compared to your old battalion, the 10th, and how did they compare, you know, in military efficiency and such things?
Oh, they were a very efficient unit. I think they were very lucky to have in Colonel Hart Dyke, who was the commanding officer, a very efficient officer and very keen to do a good job, and they were, without doubt, a very good battalion.
Do you think they were better than the 10th?
I think perhaps they were, slightly better. With having this very good colonel, the efficiency throughout the unit was very high indeed. It was unfortunate that he moved away. He was moved to the Far East during the period when we were on the island. And the second in command was promoted to colonel and took over the situation of commanding officer.
Do you remember his name? Doesn't matter. Did he do as good a job or...?
Yes, he was first class. As a CO, he took to the job very well indeed and was liked by everybody and respected. And the unit proved to be a very good part of the brigade.
They made you welcome as well, did they?
I was welcomed by them all. And during the little off periods we met, I quite enjoyed the company. And everything was friendly and nice.
Now, you were there until about February 45 on this, in this rather wet. So, were the battalion actually situated on slightly higher ground, I presume? They couldn't exist in 4 feet of water, I presume.
No, the situation in the flooded areas were that you had to move into houses wherever possible. And that's what we did. To carry on the fighting, it was merely a question of defending rather than an attacking situation.
So they'd be on the first floors of houses, upstairs in houses?
Well, as most of them happened to be bungalows, it's rather difficult. It was possible in places to use the bungalows, but in particular, we had to make strong points of houses that had an upstairs.
So the flooding was everywhere?
The flooding was everywhere on the battlefront, and the problems were tremendous there. And one of the difficulties was in getting ammunition to these situations. And in one particular place, I recall, we had got a load of ammunition to take up to the front line, and we used a sledge and filled the ammunition onto the sledge and pulled it manfully along a path which had been quite successful. However, when the water started to drain away, we used the same route as before and unfortunately ran over a mine which blew up the ammunition, and we lost the four soldiers who were doing the pulling.
Were mines much of a problem? I mean, not when it was flooded, but...
Yeah. Oh, they were, the mines were a big problem, as the Germans laid mines everywhere they possibly could, which meant that no matter where you were and under what circumstances, you had to clear the place of mines for the first thing you did, make sure that the area in which you were working had been cleared of mines.
So in February you said that things moved on.
Yes, in February at long last, with due to the clearing of the weather, General Montgomery put in an attack across the Rhine in February, and then we got into a situation where we were able to take the town of Arnhem and then move on towards Utrecht, where we were at the very end of the war.
What do you remember about the advance? Anything in particular?
The advance went according to plan, and it was a question of how quick we could get there. The Germans were retreating fast, and the Americans were coming in from the south, and the battle obviously was in the last stages. Canadians, we were then under the Canadian Army, and they proved very good fighters, and the movement was quick. And in actual fact, we moved into the area of Utrecht and collected some 80,000 German prisoners.
How did you cope with that?
This worked very well indeed. We used to march the Germans through and take all the weapons from them and put them in, whilst we couldn't control them completely, we got their senior officers together and put them in charge of their units. And to keep them exercised, we sent them out on route marches because they were causing a problem having them all gathered together. And this was one way of also of keeping them fit.
Was there any problem with them?
There were no main problems, slight cases perhaps, but in the main they were well disciplined and orderly in their normal routine.
So there wasn't much fighting for you during this period? Not for, for the battalion, sorry.
No, at the end of the war the fighting petered out with the taking of Utrecht and other places nearby.
Do you remember the celebration, or if there were any celebrations on the actual VE Day, the end of the war?
Oh, there were celebrations all round, not only with the units, but with the civilians. The population were delighted, and we were cheered everywhere we went. And there were parties and general happiness all round, I think.
And then what, I mean, you weren't immediately demobbed, of course, were you?
Oh, no, no. Actually, I went off on my own with a driver to a small village, really, wanting to deliver a message to a Dutch family on behalf of the a family that I had been billeted on. And I happened to be the first British person to enter this village. We drove along the road and were confronted by all the villagers who were blocking the road and waving and cheering. So we stopped the vehicle, and the driver and myself were pulled out of the vehicle and carried shoulder high down the village road to a small cafe, and then produced drinks, and we gave them cigarettes, etc., and eventually I managed to deliver a message to this particular Dutch family. And then we returned back to Utrecht, where we were based for a few days, before actually moving to a place called Ede, E-D-E, where we were billeted and simply waiting for instructions to where we would move to next, as the war was then over.
And where did you go next?
From there, we went to a place called Recklinghausen in Germany, where we took over a hospital and a barracks, and I had the unfortunate situation of having to clear out a maternity home, as the colonel was anxious that we troops should have beds, and the only way to do that was to clear this hospital of patients, which we did.
How did you get on with the Germans at first, the civilians?
Well, the German civilians in that particular area were very friendly indeed, and there were no problems whatsoever. They were friendly, and the relationship between the British troops and the civilians can only be said to be very good indeed. It was a rural area, and really one felt they had not been very much involved in the fighting, and so had a slightly different attitude to the ones who we'd met earlier, who had suffered very badly.
Was there much evidence of the black market, or were any of the men engaged in the black market?
Oh, the black marketing, of course, one couldn't stop. Once we had sort of settled down, as opposed to fighting, and I suppose there was a little bit of selling cigarettes, mainly.
Did you have to watch, I mean, you had, as a transport officer, you were moving stores and equipment about. Mm-hmm. Was there much thieving from that, or were you able to keep it intact?
As far as I was aware, we didn't lose anything particular. In fact, I had gathered together sufficient petrol. I had actually a full 3-ton load of petrol, but managed to keep it intact, although it could have produced a fortune had it been sold. But this didn't happen, and I was happy to carry on.
How long were you at Recklinghausen?
We were there, as I recall, not very long, matter of a few weeks, before the units were being broken up. And in fact, the Hallamshire, I was the last person remaining in the Hallamshires, having dispersed all the men and the equipment and the accommodation, when I was the last person in the Hallamshire unit, having disbanded everything. I then moved to number 4 training brigade.
What exactly was that?
In Lippstadt. This was a unit formed for the training of troops. There was a catering battalion who were dealing purely with catering and training. And we had a technical unit where I was appointed chief instructor for a time and running 37 different courses.
What sort of subjects? They're obviously technical, but what?
They were all technical training courses. such as welding, blacksmithing, engineering, motor engineering, and other types of technical training.
Now, you wouldn't actually lecture, would you? You'd just
supervise? No, I merely organised the courses and had to write reports on every single person.
Now, was this designed for men who were staying in the army or men who were leaving the army, the whole training brigade?
No, it was mainly for men who would be staying for some time yet in the army.
It wasn't to prepare them for civilian life then?
No, it wasn't. Not to my knowledge did anyone come under those circumstances.
When did you join them, the 4th Training Brigade, roughly?
In December 1945.
And that was at Lippstadt. How long did you stay there?
I was there until July 1947.
So you served well beyond your time. Is that when you got promoted? You get promoted while you were there, did you?
Well, I was already a captain. I remained a captain there.
And anything you remember particularly about your time there? Any points of interest?
Well, this was a full-time job, and I was kept going all day. It was entailed a lot of work, and especially on the writing of reports, because each week there would be two or three courses starting, some finishing, and I had a lot of time spent on writing reports.
So the instructors would presumably write the initial reports and then you'd collate them? And
Yes, it's a question of collecting the class reports and giving a final report on each particular student.
A bit like a form teacher or headmaster would do.
Yes, more or less the same situation, yes.
Would any deterioration in the standards of behaviour and discipline in the troops after the war had ended?
No, I think most of them were looking forward to leaving the army, having served through difficult conditions, and mainly, I think, looking forward to going back to civilian life, because the number of full-time soldiers were very few by comparison, and the units were disbanding as quickly as possible.
And you were providing the specialists of various sorts for various for the units in Germany, I presume.
Yes. These courses were filling a gap and certainly welcomed by everyone, I think, because in everyone's mind it was a question of what am I going to do and what job will I get when I get released from the army.
Were you able to bring your wife out to join you? Otherwise, it's a long time to be away from home.
No, there was no situation there for wives for the first few months. And then eventually, I was able to get my wife out. And she came out in 1947 for a few months. And so then came home before I did.
Now, were you intending to stay on in the regular army, or were you looking forward to your demob yourself?
I know, I wanted to stay, if I could, but
you were enjoying the life?
I enjoyed army life very much, and came home and was offered a position which seemed to me to be a good one, and looking at it a long term, I felt I should come out and take the civilian job.
What was this position you were offered? Because you'd been in charge of a shop, hadn't you? An outfitting shop. And
yes. This particular job that was offered to me was to take over a business that supplied clothing and bedding, sheets, crockery, all supplies needed on ships. And it was situated near the docksides in South Shields.
How had you got this offer?
Well, I happened to know the owner of this business, who was later Sir Laurie Edwards, and he offered me this position, and I felt confident it would turn out to be a good job.
And that tempted you away from the army?
Yes.
You saw it as a better prospect?
It looked good, and the prospects looked good. I was to understudy the manager for a few months, and then Sir Laurie said he would ask him to retire, as he was a man of some 72 years old. Unfortunately, things didn't work out as they should have done, and this job lasted a mere 2 months.
What was the problem?
The problem was that this manager thought I was acting as a sort of spy for the owner, Sir Laurie Edwards, which I wasn't. Had no connection whatsoever in that respect. So I eventually had to leave because the situation was impossible. And it was then that I applied to the army and was given an extended commission for the next 8 years.
Which regiment did you go back to?
Well, I couldn't get back into the infantry because they had sufficient numbers. So I was suggested to me that I should join the Royal Army Ordnance Corps.
Using your transport officer experience?
This I did.
So that would be 48, would it, or back into 47?
I had one or two jobs in between this appointment, and it was by sheer chance that I met an officer who had suggested that I should apply to go back into the army.
That was in 1952?
Yes. And I was glad I did, because I got back into a job that I liked doing. And I stayed there for 8 years.
Thank you very much.